You are listening to Diversity, Inclusion, and Equality, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Diversity without inclusion is inequality. Today we have with us Mr. Robert Carnegie Jr., candidate for Brooklyn Borough President. I came across a newspaper article that said 12,000 white students have been able to return to their schools while black students are still waiting. Why is that so?
I think it's a trust issue. I think communities of color, the way that there's been this opening, closing, and so much inconsistency, we've seen this movie before as people of color, where we've been guinea pigs in experiments that have cost us our lives. And I think people sit waiting patiently to find a way that's safe for their students to access education. And I think that that's one of the major barriers to black and Hispanic and Caribbean and African folks sending their kids into a system that they're just not sure about yet. And so they'd rather educate their children at home because the system has never worked for them. We are in the most segregated school system in the United States of America, if you could imagine. Not Scuba, Mississippi, not somewhere remotely in Georgia. It's actually the New York State school system. So parents have a reasonable expectation that the system has not worked for them, and they want to see it work before they integrate their students, their most precious assets, back into it. I think that's the barrier.
You mentioned an issue of trust. How would you work to help parents know that their children will be safe when they return?
By advocating on their behalf with the DOE, by making sure that the systems that are in place are not haphazard, and by making sure that they've been tried and true and that they've been tested by medical professionals. Part of the conversation around the pandemic was whether or not we were following the guidance of medical professionals, or we were just doing what was in the best interest and the most expedient for getting the economy going. I will work to make sure continually that families are a priority and that we're using the guidance that is given by our medical professionals as to whether or not we should be returning and whether or not we should be wearing masks and whether or not we should be social distancing and what's in the best interest for the long-term health of our communities, because our children figuratively and literally are our future. We are duly bound to protect them at every cost and at every turn. And I sit poised and ready to continue to do that, to make sure that we can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the health of our students is a priority and that there are no gaps and or holes in what we need to accomplish that.
Definitely. As you said, our children are our future, and we don't want any gaps. But we're seeing still, as parents have their children home, that many of these children still do not have the equipment. They don't have the Wi-Fi needed to continue with their education while at home. And it's putting them in a situation where, yes, they are left behind. What would you propose that we do about this situation?
So here's the funny thing. This pandemic has actually exacerbated every inequity that black folks, folks of color, minority communities have faced, whether it's the healthcare disparities, whether it's the education disparities, whether it's the small business disparities, whether it's the affordable housing disparities, have all been on full display for us to witness. I recently, as of last Wednesday, had a Facebook Live where I had three education professionals, two principals, and someone who runs a nonprofit for ancillary services for young people come on and talk about exactly this, and talk about exactly how important it was to make sure that our students, our black and brown students, which make up the lion's share of the students in the Department of Education school system, are protected and taken care of. So I am partnering with education professionals on a constant basis to get us to a place where we know what's in the best interest for our young people. One of those principals cited to me, this was last Wednesday, that 55 families had come to her and told her that they had either not received their equipment or were in places where their equipment couldn't operate, whether it was shelters, whether it was whatever, that didn't have the appropriate Wi-Fi systems in place to operate. We had kids sitting outside in the cold doing their homework because that's the only way, that the only place that they could get a signal. So we know that, and I foolishly assumed that the digital divide would be the pathway for some equity in our school system, and it hasn't been. I thought that if books weren't an issue, which we've always gotten the second level of books and information, that technology would be the great equalizer, right? If you're using an app-based system to disseminate information to our young people, there's no way you could possibly give it to the Upper West Side differently than you could give it to the to Brownsville and East New York. However, the access to it through equipment and through the ability to access the internet has proven to be as equally as segregated as if you were giving them one book from 1977 and a current and another demographic a book from 2020. So the system, the overall system is not designed to provide equity for Black students and white students. And we're not even in an environment where Black students and white students are competing. We're competing globally. We're competing with Chinese students. We're competing with Asian students in other parts of the world and measuring our ability to be assets to an evolving economy. So we are behind at every turn because the system is not prepared to bring the proper equity.
No, the system is not prepared. We're dealing with systemic racism. We're dealing with segregation that, you know, we've dealt with for decades. And how do you propose to have this conversation like we're having today about diversity, inclusion, and equality in dealing with the heads of these systems and dealing with corporations and dealing with school administration and health administration? How do you propose to have this conversation that we're having today with them?
Fortunately for me, the borough president's role and that office have two major components to it. One component is access to capital funding in the hundreds of millions of dollars over my 4-year and 8-year tenures. And the other is the largest bully pulpit in the country. Brooklyn, if it was a city, would be the fourth largest city. Brooklyn should have its own mayor. It's so large. But it also gives you a large pulpit, and it gives a lot of attention to the needs of communities that have often been underserved. So I get to, as one, the actual biggest Black man in the city of New York, figuratively and literally, take my voice and my acumen and have it echoed by using that platform, the platform of the Brooklyn Borough President, to point out these inequities, to in some instances bring attention to, and in some instances embarrass and hold accountable these very systems that have conspired to keep us behind. So I sit poised and ready to do that. I sit poised and ready to elevate the voice that I've already echoed from my corner, which is Bedford-Stuyvesant in Northern Crown Heights, which is the last bastion of Black home ownership in Mass, the last bastion of small business ownership in Mass, the last bastion of ecumenical power in Mass, and the last bastion of political power in Mass, and it's under siege as we speak from outside forces. So I get to take that experience of a community that's been underserved, who's looking for prominence, and spread that borough wide. I'm so excited about that opportunity.
Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Carnegie. This has been Diversity, Inclusion, and Equality. Thank you all for listening.